Hey Neil, how's it going?
Elizabeth, it's going great. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm really excited because we have a podcast all about camping today. And camping's something that you and I share. It's one of our favorite things to do.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of great conversations about it. We essentially sell the idea of it every day at work. And, you know, both of us are, you know, lifelong outdoor lovers. And it's really refreshing when you talk to other people like that, that are sharing these awesome tips and information for our listeners.
Yeah. What you're saying is that we really like to nerd out together about camping.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I'm on board. And as a nerd overall, I would like to start with a game because as a nerd, I really love games. And I guess it's more of a quiz. So are you up for it, Neil? Can I bribe you into put you on the spot? Have you taken a quiz for me?
It's a surprise. I didn't know there was going to be a quiz today.
I know. Well, the good news is there's no right or wrong answer, but it's kind of fun. It's a quiz put out by Keen. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's a shoemaker brand for outdoor footwear. So Keen put out this quiz and it's called, which type of camper are you? Okay. And I thought it'd be fun to ask you the questions and like uncover what kind of camper you are, Neil. And okay, we can compare.
That's super interesting because the type of camper I am has changed over the years.
Uh-huh. Yes. I was thinking about that myself and I will be very interested to see, you know, camping looks really different for different families, different people. So it will be interesting to compare my camping profile and your camping profile. I took the quiz ahead of time and I'm only putting you on the spot.
Okay.
Well, let's I'm glad you're a good sport. Okay. Neil, if you can click on the link for me to have this up and I'm going to read the questions, but if you need to like, you know, stew your answer over, you can kind of look at the options and choose. And then to the listeners, if you want to take the quiz too and find out your camping type, we'll put the link in our in the show notes here. So, Neil, thanks for being a good sport. Let's start with question number one to uncover what type of camper you are. So question number one, if you had to choose one thing to take with you camping, what would it be? A, I can't live without my pillow. B, my faithful hiking boots. C, a tarp. You just never know when you're going to need one. D, comfy camp slides that can really complete the experience. Or E, a s'mores kit, because without s'mores, is it even camping?
Well, for me, this one is very easy because I'd take my faithful hiking boots.
Okay, yep.
Because I've had, when I was younger, some situations, you know, boots didn't fit quite right or they got wet and I didn't, you know, have a waterproof pair or whatever. I think that, and maybe it's just me, but if my feet are comfortable, I'll stay out there longer.
Yeah, that is the key. You're right. Okay. I love it. Good choice. Number two, pick the set of words that best describes your personality. And I think I know the answer, but I'm excited to see what you say. So A, go with the flow, chill, and sometimes your friends refer to you as a nomadic. B, active, focused, adventurous. You enjoy being surprised and awe-inspired by nature. C, down for anything, resourceful, curious. You love thinking on your feet. Or D, leisurely sophisticated, you're a notorious overpacker. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not you, Neil. Or E, eager, fun-loving, sociable, an opportunity to make new friends. Yes, please.
So, you know, as you're going through these, there's several, actually.
It changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I when I go out there, I do go with the flow. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of just see what's happening, but I like to be pretty focused also in what I do. Yeah. You know, if I'm going out there, if I want to go fishing, you know, we're going to fish, but there's going to be also some birding involved, you know, because when you're fishing, you see birds and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know when I was reading these choices, when I first hit the first one, it's like, oh, that's Neil. And then I got to the next one. I was like, oh, but that's also Neil. And then I got to the last one. I was like, that's Neil too. So it's a quiz. You got to pick one. What's it going to be?
I'm also down for anything, you know, out there.
I mean, also fun loving and sociable.
I know. Yeah. This is so hard. say, I'm just going to say down for anything, because I think that kind of encompasses all of the choices. But I will say,
I think that's good.
Different trips, though, call for different things. Because my kids are with me, I'm going to be more chill.
Yeah.
Than if I'm actively, you know, seeking out a certain type of fish, or maybe I'm bow hunting or something, I'll be right. Very focused. So.
Different mood for different trips. I like it. Okay, we'll go with C. Number three, how does your dream camping day begin? And I loved this question, because morning at the campsites is like one of my favorite parts about camping. So A, making some coffee in bed and enjoying the sounds of the birds chirping. B, waking up when the sun hits my eyelids, pulling on my favorite shorts, which are the ones I wore yesterday too. That's camping vibes. And eating an energy bar before I hit the trail. C, sleeping in a little bit and then strolling around outside in my underwear. What? Okay, if you're an established campsite, this is not an option.
Right, right. Don't do that in the state parks, please.
Yeah, that's right, please. D, is that the smell of waffles, like making a big fancy breakfast? Or E, hearing the clanking of other camping pots and pans, like a gentle good morning alarm?
I like to wake up early out there, you know, so I wake up early, have a little snack, and then start doing what I'm doing, you know, and then when I'm out there hiking or whatever I'm doing, I'll have more snacks. And then,
more snacks. That doesn't surprise me at all. Neil and I took a trip out to one of our parks last week, and he was ready to meet at 6 o'clock, and you were bright eyed and bushy tail. I was dragging a little bit. I needed my coffee. So that makes sense. That's a good answer for you.
I had a little coffee already.
Before. Oh, okay. You just outed yourself. You spilled your secret to your vibrancy in the morning. Okay. Question number four. If you had to describe your ideal camping sleep situation, what would it be? A, I like to feel like I'm nestled in a cocoon, preferably one that has my favorite sheets. So I guess a little more comfy. B, I can sleep on anything, anywhere. C, if it's great if the sleeping area is flat, but sometimes you need to sacrifice that for an epic view. And I think maybe that's talking about like a hammock, maybe.
Yeah.
D, the bigger the bed, the better. Plush pillows preferred. Or E, a crowded sleep place is really the best for me. A couple of kids, a dog, a few pairs of smelly socks.
Well, I'm very used to a crowded sleep space. We have a pop-up trailer, and I have four kids and my wife, and everybody fits, but it's pretty crowded. That may not be the optimal sleep situation.
Okay. So you can handle a crowded sleep space.
I can, but I can also sleep anywhere, because I've fallen asleep just on the ground and rocks, and then you wake up and you're like, oh my God,
what? Yeah, you can cowboy camp, but you pay for it later.
Yeah. So,
okay, good choice. E is your final answer. A crowded sleep space is best for you.
Just because I think that's what I'm at my
your norm.
And my kids are there, and it's like what I mostly do nowadays.
Yeah. Okay. Number five, how long are you comfortable going without a shower? Careful, your reputation's at stake.
Yeah. So I've been on 2 week hunting trips and I haven't taken a shower. I mean,
okay. So your answer is C. Nobody is even around. So why would I need a shower? It can wait until I'm back home.
I mean, there's maintenance. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But overall, you're going to be able to go for a bit.
Yeah.
You're taking a towel shower.
Well, you got to smell like the elk, right?
Do you? Okay, I like it. Number six, it's time for dinner. What do you make? A, you can pick up a pizza and eat it in front of the sunset somewhere. B, if it's a really special night, you'll do a freeze-dried packet of stroganoff, which those have a time and a place. They're really convenient. C, sauteed veggies and fresh-caught trout is perfect. D, a fancy braised pork shank with wild mushrooms. E, I go for the classics, hot dog grilled over the fire and some fresh watermelon.
I always love fresh caught trout.
You do. Yeah. That answer is made for you.
Yeah. I mean, usually I'll take some bacon and saute it with the vegetables also.
Uh-huh. Give it some nice flavor there.
In the bacon grease. Yeah.
You're doing it right. Okay. Two more questions to go. And then we find out what type of camper you are, Neil.
Excited.
Number seven, fill in the blank. I can go camping. I go camping so that I can explore. I love to turn down an unmarked dirt road and see where it leads. B, test my limits and see beautiful parts of our planet while I'm at it. C, find solitude. Spending time in nature with only a few friends around is perfection for me. D, visit a new place. I love seeing a different view for a while. Or E, meet up with friends and family. A big camp out is my idea of a good time.
Man, so I do love camping with my family. That's a lot of fun. But there's also times that I camp without my family and I have solitude. So it's really someplace in between those.
Mm-hmm.
Although anymore, I mostly camp with friends and family.
Yeah. Final answer, E. You're torn.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. Number, given that that's what you're most often doing now, we'll put it down. E, friends and family.
Okay.
And final question, Neil, number eight, what piece of camping gear are you dreaming of getting next? A solar panel starter kit, an ultralight tent, C, a portable toilet. I'm guessing you have one of those. D, traveling cocktail kit, or E, one of those foldable camp kitchens that has a little wash basin.
I was shopping online for these yesterday.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, no, the solar panel starter kit.
Seriously.
So put some solar panels on the trailer. I just got solar at my house and it's so far working.
Harnessing the power of the sun here in Arizona. I like it. I'm Chrissy, note for the Christmas list. Neil wants some solar panels for the campsite.
Christmas will make her listen.
I love it. Well, that is all the questions. And now we get to read the results. And Neil, guess what?
What?
You and I are the same camper type, which I find wild because I know that you like to rough it and I prefer to car camp. But I think at the heart of it all is maybe we share something in common about why we like to do it. So I'll read your profile. Your answer is mostly C. That was the highest by 1 point of all A, B, C, D, and E. And that is a dispersed camping curious. You find a perfect camp spot, and it's part of the fun for you is finding the camp spot. You love a forest pass, and your good instincts are all you need in order to snag an epic spot. Your offline maps are full of saved locations that you can escape to. You're respectful in nature and always leave a campsite better than you found it.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, you should get a gold star.
That is pretty true. And I kind of thought it was funny when you mentioned the offline maps is full of saved locations because it's getting to the point where I'm like, I got to delete some of these so I can see the freaking ground in this map.
Yeah, it's probably taking up a lot of memory on your phone.
Oh my God. I'll be like, oh, there's a bear over here. Got to mark it. Oh, there's some cool birds over here. I'll mark it. Maybe come back and look at them again sometime. Or there's access to this road. Yeah, just so many things that you mark on there.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I love it. I think it's super fun that we got the same result. If you, the listener, wants to take this quiz, you could find out you're all about that van life. You're a sufferfest backpacker, so you embrace the suck. Or you're a cabin connoisseur and like more comfy things in life. Or you're a car camping guru and you've really figured out how to master that with big groups and have some of those conveniences. So it's kind of fun to think about how everybody can enjoy a camping trip, no matter what you're into.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things to do out there, so many places to go and see that there really is enough options. So I look at the outdoors kind of like a sandwich. Okay. Mm. So a sandwich, which is my favorite food, and it's my favorite food because there's infinite combinations. And when you go into the outdoors, there's also infinite combinations because there's so many different places, so many different recreation types and animals and birds and things that you're going to encounter. The more exciting thing about camping is a lot of that is unknown. When I order a sandwich, I know what I'm getting on and I'm excited about it. And then when I go camping, I know I'm getting a good sandwich. I just don't know what kind.
That's right. You'd be like, I want my sandwich with bread, but is it ciabatta? Is it brioche? You don't know. Could be sourdough.
Right, which is great.
Yeah. Oh, I like to think of it that way. It, really, I mean, if you like creature comforts, there's a way for you to camp. You could try camping in an RV. You could try camping in a cabin. If you are someone who's brand new to it, and maybe you don't know, you know, you don't have the experience or you don't have the gear, you could try going with a friend first time or try out a camping program. Arizona State Parks has one.
Yeah, Louie, we're going to talk to him later.
Yeah, we are. So there are different options, but no matter how you enjoy camping, you are going to enjoy camping. And I think that's the fun thing. If you've not done it before, push yourself to give it a shot because you'll probably have a great time and get hooked. And today we're talking with a whole bunch of experts all about camping. So buckle up. This is going to be a longer episode.
People are going to learn a lot here. We're talking to some notable experts in the outdoor field. They're outdoor professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, exactly.
That have done the work. They understand the science.
They're published authors. Like day in, day out, this is their lives. Yeah. So we're going to dive into like some of the main aspects of camping. And I hope that listeners, you come away with a lot of great actionable resources. The first person that we're going to talk to is actually a medical professional, which is kind of a fun way to start. But we're going to speak with Dr. Brent Bauer, and he's a general internal medicine physician at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And Neil, I'm sure you recall, but we did a specific episode with Dr. Bauer not too long ago, and we're going to dive into something deeper that he was talking about, specifically about camping. But Dr. Bauer is going to explain why you're going to love it. If you've not been camping and you try it, you're probably going to really enjoy it. And there's a scientific reason why. And Dr. Bauer is going to explain that.
Well, humans are, and this is coming straight for the doctor, we're predisposed to require the interaction with nature or some aspects of it in our lives to enrich our lives, to be able to enjoy it to the fullest. And the way he articulates that in this interview is pretty awesome. And it reinforces a lot of the things we've been talking about on the podcast.
You're totally right. It's a concept called biophilia, and it explains our human need for a connection to nature. So let's dive right in and hear from Dr. Bauer. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I'm wondering if you can start with a very general overview of how spending time in nature is good for us from a mental and physical health standpoint.
Yeah. Well, we could probably spend a couple hours going down the different rabbit holes that would take us. But, you know, at the very top of all this is this concept of biophilia. And really what that means is increasingly science shows us we are wired to be connected to nature. And, you know, so you think about it, if you're in a room with no windows, you're in a room with windows and you can see trees and bushes and animals, or you're listening to a bubbling brook or the aquarium in your office, you feel differently. And so I think intuitively, we know that nature is good for us. We generally feel better outdoors. We like to be by bodies of water, running streams, seeing animals in nature. So intuitively, it's there. What has changed in probably the last 15 or 20 years, tons of research, all pointing in the direction that actually there's a measurable benefit for human beings to spend more time in nature.
Are there any health benefits you can think of when it comes specifically to camping, whether that's spending time out in the dark at night or anything about your internal body clock? Just what benefits might someone see from camping?
Yeah, I think you hit a couple of them, right? When we camp, hopefully we're not taking our phones 24/7, although you see that sometimes, but you do tend to get more in rhythm, right? We tend to get up when you're camping, you generally can't sleep, or at least I can't sleep late, because when the sun's up, the sun's up. It doesn't matter if you, so, and when the sun goes down and you don't have hopefully a television or some other way of being entertained, you start to get tired, right? You don't stay up until 3 o'clock because there's not a television show you're going to watch or so forth. So I think there's a lot of things that happen when you go camping, especially for extended periods, especially for overnight. We tend to get away from a lot of the things that kind of fill our brains, right? When you're at home, you can just look over there. Oh, there's that pile of bills I haven't done. Look over there. There's this thing there. And you really kind of, it's a burden. And to be away from that most of the time, God willing, when we're out in nature, we're not worrying about our checkbook balance. We're not doing the things that can occupy our brains when everything's right in front of us at home. So there's a lot of things. I think, you know, sometimes just the change in the air quality. You know, some places, obviously we some of the big cities really have horrible air pollution, dangerous chemicals in some of these cities that I've had patients who I've actually recommended to move from places where the heavy metals in the air and so forth are so high. And for them to spend a week, somewhere, maybe by the beach, maybe in a mountain, they come back and guess what? My respiratory problems are better. My allergies are better. And it doesn't take long to see the benefit of, you know, maybe we shouldn't be living in a crowded, polluted area without access to nature.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, even the smells out there, like the breaking down leaves in a little creek up north, you know, just that the smell of decaying leaves is fresh and invigorating. And, you know, the pine trees, obviously, we talked about that earlier. But yeah, Phoenix, sometimes it doesn't smell that great.
Yeah. most times it doesn't smell that great.
Doesn't
I feel like I can always breathe easier when I go to the campsite, and whether that's better air quality or my anxiety melting away, either one. Yeah, it's been like ways.
Skunk smells and javelina, you know, they all it's just different, new and wild and exciting. So yeah, I totally agree. It's all the senses.
Wow, Dr. Bauer is a smart fella. In fact, we had a really fun time talking with him. He is willing to share this knowledge with anyone who will listen because he knows how beneficial it is for people's health. And that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. And if you want to know more of what Dr. Bauer was talking about, what was that? Episode 19.
Yeah. Go out,
it's good for your health. We take a deep dive into it, and it's going to really... you know, shed some light on why you love the outdoors, or maybe if you're on the fence, it'll maybe kind of give you a kick in the right direction.
Yeah. And some easy things you can do to incorporate nature into your everyday life, even when you're not outside, and still get some of those same benefits. So we'll link that episode in the show notes because it is worth a listen for sure. And if you're convinced, okay, so I need to get outdoors, spend some time in nature, maybe a camping trip is the way to do it. Your next question just might be, what do I got to bring with me?
Well, our next guest is going to tell you. She's been exploring the outdoors since her childhood in rural northern Arizona. Ryan Crary is recreation supervisor for the town of Prescott Valley Parks and Rec. And she also takes care of the marketing and outreach for Hike Shack that's up there.
Yeah, she is all about the outdoor way of life. And we really had a great time talking with her. Ryan is a wealth of information and tapped into her extensive outdoor knowledge to share some of her best tips with our listeners.
Yes, she did. That was such a fun conversation. Ryan's passion about the outdoors is super contagious, and she just shared so much great info.
Absolutely, she did. So much great information. You guys are going to really enjoy our talk with Ryan. So stick around. Because after we speak with Ryan, we're going to move on to some delicious camping recipes and food tips.
Can't wait.
So we have Ryan Crary from the Hike Shack, who's the head of marketing and outreach. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Yes, thanks for having me here. I'm really excited to be here.
Man, well, we're stoked to talk to you. You know, we were talking a little bit before the show about how local shops have all the up-to-date, like almost insider info for the area. And I always love stopping into local shops when I go to these smaller towns. I'm in Phoenix, so most towns in Arizona are smaller towns.
Oh, yeah.
So can you kind of walk us through real quick how you would get pair somebody with a situation in the area if they came in, say somebody comes in, they're like, hey, you know, I want to go hiking, you know, not something super strenuous, but maybe near a body of water.
Yeah, totally. So we get a lot of people from out of town, in town all the time. And whether they're just starting out on hiking or getting back into it, we like to prepare them for whatever they need or want for that trip. So firstly, we'll start off and get to know them a bit more, know what their experience is like, what they're looking for. So if they are looking for a nice, easy hike around a body of water, we then take out our Prescott Trails area map. We have this pretty good sized map. It's the dollar that we offer in the Hike Shack, put on by the Over the Hill Gang in Prescott National Forest. And we'll kind of go over some trails with them. We'll explain what the terrain is like, what the rating is like, our personal experiences with it. Just because at the Hike Shack, we like to hire locals who are very familiar with the area. They're on the trails all the time and they know what's up with all of them, you know, up to date, what the trails conditions are like this week, everything. So for example, if you're looking for a nice, you know, 1 to 2 mile hike, I'd probably recommend taking a loop around Lynx Lake. It's a really beautiful lake we have here. It's wonderful. I love it. Yeah. And it's about 2.6 miles and it's pretty easy terrain. And then from there, we get to talk to you about shoes. So at the Hike Shack, we love shoes. We love all types of shoes. And each of our staff are personally trained to get to know your feet pretty well, get to know what shoes you need, maybe which ones you don't like. If you like how this one looks because it's really cute, but it doesn't feel good, we'll find something that's comparable to it just because cuteness is a factor sometimes.
Sometimes if it motivates you to put them on and go, then it's worth considering.
Totally. But then there's times where it's like, oh, I don't like how the boot looks. It's so burly looking. But the second they put it on, it's just, oh, it's life-changing. It's perfect.
You know, I love a boot. Yeah. It's an amazing experience when you find the one you're looking for.
Totally. Yeah. And before I started working at the Hike Shack, I didn't really care what shoes I had on when I went hiking. And when I started working there, I realized it makes a huge difference what you put on your feet. It can make or break a trip entirely.
That's true.
So from there, we'll go ahead and do a personalized fitting experience where we'll measure your feet, measure the length, width, your arch, your instep, and then we'll try out a couple different options for shoes we have. That can also include putting in insoles for your shoes if they need to perfectly contour your arch or anything, because I know that makes a big difference. Or try different, different pairs of socks too, to see what feels most comfortable for you.
Socks. Shoes are really important on a hiking and camping trip. Camping, your socks can be a lifesaver. There is nothing worse than trying to fall asleep and your feet are freezing. If you have a good, nice, thick pair of socks to sleep in, that can really help.
That totally can. Yeah, I know I've had lots of camping trips ruined because I thought my toes were going to fall off.
Back in the day, it doesn't happen as often anymore.
Yeah, right.
I'm more of a trailer camper now.
Yeah, it takes all kinds, and lots of people start out with tent camping and then eventually graduate. You know, talking about tent camping, when you're selecting a tent, what would you tell our listeners that they should think about or look for when they're considering? There's so many different options. So what's the priority?
So a good priority is honestly to start with is budget. So what you're willing to pay for, if you're going to use this tent for just a one-time trip thing, then I'd go ahead and get something maybe a bit more inexpensive because you don't want to put that much money into it if you're not going to use it that often. Mm-hmm. But also how many people are going, what you're using this tent for. So if you're an extreme lightweight backpacker, you're probably going to be carrying something different than say a family of four who's car camping. So if you are doing that car camping, which I've been a fan of lately, I like being very comfortable.
Same.
Like a long time ago, it was like lightweight, extreme, bring nothing. But now I'm like, I'm bringing my pillow and my other blankets. So
I used to do the same thing, just camp on the ground or cot outside right by my truck. If it rained, maybe just get under the truck.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Now I like the creature comforts.
Yes, very much so.
I'm glad you brought up size. That's a good consideration. I've noticed when I've gone camping, you know, once you fall in love with camping, you want everyone around you to fall in love with it too. You have to go camping with me. And then you're inviting people who are newer to it. And what I find is that a lot of new campers think that bigger is always better when it comes to a tent, but maybe that's not always the case.
So that's a very good point. So for example, when my husband and I, when we go camping or backpacking, we'll bring our 2-person tent because just the two of us and then the 2 dogs and we all fit in there. Another perk of it is if you're going camping during the wintertime, you might not necessarily want a huge tent because the smaller the tent, the more heat you have in there and the more warm you'll stay. It also is just helpful because you're packing in what you're packing out. So if you bring those huge 8-person tents, you're the one who's going to bring that out and set it up. But if you have a huge group you're going at, you're just camping at a local campsite near the lake, that's a great option for you too.
And most tents nowadays come with a rain fly on them, which is cool because there's like a just a screen ceiling. So when it's nice outside and you're not trying to conserve your heat, you can take it off and like look at the stars and stuff.
Totally. Yeah. And it's a great way to get some extra airflow in there too. So it's not all stuffy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. What else should campers think about when they're going out for their trips? Is there in the hike shack, in the store, when people come in, is there something that they have maybe forgotten when they prepare for a camping trip and it's a, oh shoot, we got out to the site and we realized we didn't bring this with us?
Yeah. So a lot of times it's if they come up north and they forget layers because they didn't realize it's actually very cool here at night. You know, it might be 70 and beautiful during the day, but it's going to get to near 30 degrees at night and it gets cold. So one thing is if you're going car camping, staying local, bring a lot of layers, even bring a rain jacket. Even if there's a small chance of it raining, it might rain on you, honestly. Yeah. But just bring a lot of layers. A great layer you can also do is a merino wool socks. That'll really help you. And then moisture wicking layers too. So we have long underwear where it's t-shirts, the pants. Those are life-saving layers. They're able to put on and they'll fit snugly on your body and keep you very warm, but it won't hold in all the moisture too. So they'll allow for breathability and any movement that you may need to be doing. Another thing is just bring lightweight jackets. If you need to bring a down jacket, which will keep you very, very warm, but just know your level of comfortability and what you think you'll be needing. And then if you have questions, you can always stop at a local gear shop because they might know the weather better than you think, and they'll have great recommendations for you.
And if you had a great point, like it's underlayers are they're life saving, but they're also life changing. If you haven't ever gone to the high country with a good set of underlayers, I mean, you're missing out because it really helps to accentuate the experience and help you stay out there longer.
I have flashing memories going through my head of like trips before we were experienced where we didn't layer properly. The wool that you're saying, we all have horror stories. Yeah. The wool is so brilliant. I mean, I have in the past woken up thinking that I was being smart, layering some really heavy layers in my sleeping bag and then waking up and needing to air out my sleeping bag in the morning because it was wet with sweat, which is disgusting. And I'm sorry for the TMI.
No, that's totally it. Because, you know, if you wear just a bunch of cotton layers, you're keeping yourself warm, but you're not allowing the breathability and you're just sweating up in there and it's not fun at all.
No. How about sleeping bags? That's another thing to think about when you're choosing your sleeping bag. There's some different styles, there's different temperature ratings. So what should people be thinking about?
Yeah. So I say whenever you're shopping for sleeping bags, go to someplace in person and try them out too. There are so many different styles, brands, and ratings now that you have to try them on to know it works for you. A lot of people, they'll go straight for, you know, the negative 30 degree ones, and very few people might need something that extreme. So you can just try out one that's maybe, you know, a 20 degree rating, which is great for a lot of purposes. You know, you don't need to get down to the negatives or zero temperatures as long as you're comfortable, because they'll keep you warm, especially if it's like a down or a synthetic type of sleeping bag. They'll keep you nice and toasty.
Trying them out's a good point, because I learned after purchasing a mummy bag that I don't like to be that, my feet to be that close together.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't get comfortable. So I had to look at other options, and there are other options out there for lightweight bags that are pretty small, but
yeah. And that's a great point too, because how you sleep will change what bag you need too, because I'm a side sleeper and I toss and turn. So a mummy bag kind of freak me out too. Mm-hmm. That also plays into what sleeping pad you might get too whenever you go camping, if you're using a sleeping pad.
Good point. I think when I first started, I was always using an air mattress. And I discovered really quickly when I went camping my first time in Sedona during February, I learned really quickly that the air mattress was not the way to go because it's very, very cold.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, an air mattress is great, but it's not going to provide super great insulation between between you, the ground, and the elements. When you get a sleeping pad, it provides that extra layer, however much you might need. And it really makes all the difference. It keeps your back comfortable. It can contour you a lot better. And it'll keep you nice and warm or nice and cold, depending on where you're going. And there's a lot of cool ones. If you are into the creature comforts, there are ones with, like, you know, 1 to 2 inch foam pads, which I've been a fan of lately. But there's also good and lightweight ones that are really affordable and lightweight for your pack if you might need it.
Good point.
Heck yeah. I was always thicker, the better.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I've stacked nice. Them before.
Yeah. There's no shame in that, Neil.
I know.
Yeah, like our new car camping routine, it's like get a Therm-a-Rest foam pad, a Nemo pad, and, you know, what, a Paco pad, all the pads. So
yeah. Why not be comfortable if you have the space? Yeah. So I like that you brought up the budget point, you know, start there and then work within it, because investing in this gear can be expensive if you choose that you want to keep adding to your collection. And given that it can be an investment, are there any best practices that you would share for our listeners about protecting their equipment and making sure that those investments last for a long time?
Yeah, especially if you get, you know, say a $300 sleeping bag, you're going to want to make it last as long as possible. A lot of these organizations and companies that produce these bags will have recommended ways of storing them for long lasting. But what we also recommend is you keep them in this air mesh bag that comes with the sleeping bag typically. You can store it in that and keep it in a sealed container. That way, you know, mice or any bugs won't get into it. Or you're able to store it, say you get a special type of hanger, or use any hanger really for it, and store it in a safe, cool place too. That way it's able to flow out, the down or synthetic materials able to breathe too. It's not going to get all stuffy and, you know, moldy too.
Right. Yeah. Before I learned to air them out, there was definitely an odor to them.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because, I mean, I'd be out hiking or hunting or whatever and just come back all stinky and climb into the but there is some maintenance involved with them.
Yeah, sure. There is.
We're, you know, so sorry, Ryan. We just met you and we're really
grossing you out, man.
That's what camping is, though. I mean, it's just like your hygiene's out the window. Nothing matters. Like you're eating peanut butter for dinner. So
it's all about just relaxing and having fun, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's fun being messy and sloppy, and then you get home and get all clean and it's nice. But on the sleeping bags too, there is sleeping bag washing material now, so you can wash it too, which is really cool. So
yeah, my wife found that stuff.
I was gonna say, I'm hoping that maybe Chrissy hooked you up, Neil.
It's awesome.
Well, these are great tips, great advice. Thank you for sharing with us, Ryan. Is there anything you'd leave our listeners with when they're thinking about their next camping trip?
Yeah, I'd say just talk to any of your local experts about it. You know, there's no judgment. There's no pressure to purchase the most expensive gear that you're probably not going to need. But just, you know, be open to different opportunities. Try new things out. Get hiking. Go camping at your local campsites and state parks and enjoy it. This is the best season to do it, too.
Sure is. And where can people find the Hike Shack and learn more about the store?
Yeah, so we're located in downtown Prescott on 104 North Montezuma Street. And you can visit our website, thehikeshack.com, for more information. Just call for questions, even if it's not about the Prescott area. We love to talk about it. And our owners are wonderful, amazing women who know everything there is about the outdoors, whether it's in Arizona or pretty much anywhere. They're always out there.
Awesome. Wonderful. Man, well, thank you so much. We really appreciate you and your time today and all your
insight. You for having us.
Wow. After a conversation like that, I want to get outside, like right now.
Me too. I love that. You can really tell Ryan knows her stuff and has shared some awesome tips about enjoying the outdoors more. So once you have your gear and you've taken into account all of Ryan's great recommendations on caring for your equipment and making sure that you're packed up with all the things you're going to need, the next question that comes to mind is, what do I eat when I'm out there? Got all my gear, but what am I going to fill my belly with?
Right. And there's so many levels. Like that's such a layered question. What am I going to eat out there? Because rough it and eat, you know, granola bars and stuff like that. Or you could prep at home and have some pretty close to gourmet meals out there.
You're right. And camping in the campsite, it can be fun or a bit of a hassle and a pain. I think it really depends on how you prepare before you go out there.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all about the preparation. You can set yourself up for success if you want to eat gourmet meals, or maybe you have a specific diet you need to follow that may have been prohibiting you from going camping. Get that stuff prepared ahead of time and you can take care of all your dietary restrictions and still have fun out there and eat what you have to.
You're right. And our next guest is someone who's thought of all of those things. In fact, she's written a few books on it, and more than just a few, a lot of books. We're going to be talking with Christine Connors, and she's the co-author of a very popular outdoor cookbook series called the Lip Smackin' Campin' Books, which I think is the cutest name. But Christine and her husband, Tim, they co-author these books and they live in Southern Arizona and they're very active in the outdoors. I have bought some of Christine's book. Christine has sent me some of their books. I've got the Lip Smackin' Car Campin'. I've got Lip Smackin' Cast Iron Cookin'. I've got Lip Smackin' Vegetarian Backpacking. She's really covered it all.
She has. And I'm probably going to want to borrow the cast iron one because I think like some of the best camping dessert I've ever had was a pineapple upside down cake that was cooked in a Dutch oven.
Get out. That sounds so amazing.
Like, I ate it so much where I got sick, kind of.
Oh,
like, yeah. Like, throw up or anything. I just was like uncomfortable. Like, oh my God, I shouldn't have eaten all that. And then,
yeah. Self-control is hard when you have something that amazing in front of you, especially at the campsite.
I wasn't expecting it, so I just kept going. And, you know,
I can relate. I think I would, if in your shoes, I'd do the same thing and polish off the pineapple upside down cake. And Christine actually talks about Dutch oven cooking, so I think you're going to really enjoy what she has to say. When I talked with Christine, we got straight into the good stuff. So I launched our interview by asking Christine the question, what items do people often forget or overlook when they're prepping for campsite cooking? And it's a tough one, but let's hear what Christine has to say.
As far as items that might be overlooked, I think it's kind of more general for us. It's the idea that we have a backup plan for cooking. When we show up, we might have an anticipation of what might be available to cook on. And invariably, there might be a failure with that. Maybe there isn't a grill, or maybe they have banned fires, or maybe our stove, our portable stove doesn't work, that type of thing. So I think for us, we try to have a backup plan always, like a two different ways of cooking when we get there, just in case one of them fails, or you're planning on cooking over the fire, but the shop ran out of firewood or you didn't bring any, that type of thing. So that's one of the things that we always consider before we go. We also just in general, you know, as far as favorites, we do love the Dutch oven, but we also try to pre-pack a camping container. And so right now that's in our little pop-up RV. But before that, before we had an RV, it was a plastic container that contained our cooking supplies. And it just separated it from our home supplies. And that made it very easy to just grab the container and go. Because camping, once you're there, it's pretty easy. But getting ready and then, you know, coming home and unpacking, that seems to be the hardest part. And so having a container full of the supplies that you need, your cooking gear, your wooden spoons, your utensils, your cups, that has really helped us. And in particular, to just motivate us to go, to make it easier to go instead of, what do we need to bring? And it also makes sure that you don't forget things. So, you know, obviously there's the basics that you want to bring, you know, your fire starters and knowing how you're cooking, if you're, what kind of fuel you're using, those types of things. Just, and I think that helps with the planning. If you plan ahead beforehand, instead of in a panicked rush on your way out, just kind of having that, again, that container ready to go, assures those items are in there when you leave, and having backup as well. So not just one lighter, maybe a second lighter if you need one, that type of thing.
Are there any secrets to prepping your camp meals that make it easier to cook when you're out at the campsite?
So prepping your camp meals, I think, you know, again, it's more, it's more general for us. It's kind of, what are we going to do when we get there? What's the weather like? What is, you know, is it really hot? Are we going to be wanting chili when it's 100 degrees? Maybe not. And so the planning really, I think, is what are you planning on doing when you get there? Are you going to hang out and read books, and maybe you have time for more complicated cooking? Or are you one of those that wants to go hiking during the day and see things and have adventures and maybe even explore the town that you're in? And maybe in that case, you're thinking about, for example, breakfast and lunch might be lighter or simpler, not very complex. And then maybe you settle down at dinner, and maybe that's when you make more complex meals. So I think thinking about what you want to do when you get there, or what you're hoping to do when you get there. Are you going to be on the water, hanging out on the water? Maybe you need to make something that's easy to carry in your cooler on the water. But if you're hanging back at camp, maybe you want to do something fancy. Maybe you want to do a cheesecake in a Dutch oven, that type of thing. So if that's, you know, if you enjoy cooking and hanging out by the camp. So I think it's, for us, it's kind of the bigger picture. What are we doing? And then how do we simplify from there? And who's going? And how many people do we have to feed? Those are all the considerations. And as we've gotten, you know, we've done periods in our lives where we've done fancier cooking, and we like that. It has its place. But I think over the years, we sort of have simplified. We just sort of maybe do a little grilling if that's available, a little salad. We've really simplified. I think because we mostly want to explore the area. That's sort of where we want to spend our time. We don't want to spend our time always cooking. But that's just us. Everybody has their own way of approaching camping. So I think it's all in the planning ahead and knowing what you're going to make and knowing what you're going to do, and then simplifying it from there, if that's what you want to do.
Is there a trick to packing your cooler, keeping things cold and keeping things dry?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we bring is the blocks of, they're like plastic blocks that you freeze. We bring those. They're helpful in the cooler for keeping things cooler longer. They also, when we are using the RV, they also help to get the refrigerator going when you're first starting up, because it's always so hot. So we do that. And then you can always think about the items that you might have that are frozen being part of what's keeping everything cool, you know, keeping things at the bottom. And, you know, if, you know, for example, in Arizona, it's very hot. And so if you have a cooler out there, obviously you want to try to keep it in the shade, but you can also, for example, throw your sleeping bag over it during the day or something to kind of help insulate it a little more so it doesn't melt as quickly. And then, you know, just kind of making sure, I know this isn't the environmentally correct thing to say, but having some baggies for your food so that, for example, if you have meat, that it's not running and, you know, mixing with the water as it's melting, and just kind of trying to keep it a little bit cleaner that way. And we also try to think about, it's not always possible, but we try to think about avoiding leftovers. Leftovers at home are fine, but leftovers in the cooler, just they can leak, and they just never seem really good when you get home afterwards either, when they've been in the cooler. So when we're packing, you know, we're thinking about how to get as much frozen food in there. I remember a story from one of our contributors, a backpacker, would bring a frozen steak on their hike, and then eat it when they got to their destination. It was thaw. So starting with things that are frozen, if possible, if it won't make them go bad.
Tell me a little bit more about the Dutch oven. How do you use it, and what does it make possible now that wasn't possible before you had it?
So when we were first introduced to the Dutch oven, we had been asked to write a scout book, and we didn't really know how scouts ate. And so we were introduced to the Dutch oven at that point. And initially our thoughts were that wow, this is really heavy. This is kind of ridiculous, because we were coming from the backpacking scene and sort of transitioning with kids into the camping scene. But then when we were introduced to it, we were just so amazed about what we could cook. And you can basically, you know, bake bread. You can make desserts. You can make cheesecake. You can even, you know, we even have some techniques for making ice cream in there, using that the Dutch oven to make ice cream, to chill ice cream. So that has been, we don't always use it, but it works great, particularly when you have families or larger groups of people who need to eat, and they come in different sizes. So you just grab the oven that you need, and you stun and wow people when you are cooking with a Dutch oven, because it's, for a lot of people, they haven't been exposed to it, and they don't realize, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here eating a cheesecake that someone just baked, you know, an hour ago, that kind of thing. So that's, you know, it's not suitable for everything, obviously, but we have been really impressed with it as far as stews and everything. It's just been amazing.
That's a great piece of advice. And you have a million and one recipes for Dutch oven cooking. In fact, is one of your books Dutch oven cooking focused?
Yes.
I thought so.
Yeah, we have a cast iron cookbook, Lip Smacking Cast Iron Cooking, that just came out. And we have a number of books for Scouts. Scouts Dutch Oven Cooking is one of them. And a lot of the Scout books have Dutch oven recipes in them as well.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I know that you could really blow people's minds with the things that you can cook in a Dutch oven specifically. Mm-hmm. I mean, ice cream, that's yeah, nuts. Yeah. That is crazy.
Yeah.
How are you doing that? That's incredible.
You just put the ice and the rock salt around the oven, and it chills it, you know, around.
Yeah.
And
then you've got your bowl inside of it.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to send you a couple books. I think there might be one of those recipes in the book, in the cast iron cookbook.
That is too cool.
Or the other one. I don't know. I'll tell you which one.
That's amazing.
Neil, Christine and I could go on and on chatting. She was such a pleasure to talk with. We discussed this for more than 25 minutes. We had to cut out a lot of what Christine was saying because she just had so much good info and we had a great time. But if you like the sound of Christine's last tip there, which was on using Dutch oven cooking, which Neil, I know you are interested. So you can borrow my book, and anyone listening, definitely check out her and Tim's newest books. It includes Lip Smackin' Cast Iron Cooking. She has techniques in there and delicious recipes. I think she even has a cake in there. So lots of good stuff to look for.
Oh, for sure. So check out the books at lipsmackincampin.com, and we'll link to her website in the show notes. But if you're wanting more info and ideas on campsite cooking, check out our previous podcast episode, Campfire Cooking with Lexi from Rome Lab. And that's episode 8 from this season.
Yeah.
You know, it's always such a pleasure talking with our next guest. Louis Jures is the head of the Arizona Family Campout Program here at State Parks, and he's our very own camping expert.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he is doing this all year long, taking campers out. He is a great resource to be cherished, and his excitement about the outdoors is infectious. I can't believe how many people he's helped get into camping. He's just reducing the learning curve for a lot of people through his knowledge and experience. And that's really a gift that he's giving to us and to Arizona.
It is. And he gifted us with his time, because he's a busy guy.
Like, yeah.
These camping trips, it takes a lot of time, but we're glad he found time in his schedule to chat with us about camping on this episode. We really think you'll enjoy what he has to say, and more than likely you'll learn something new, whether you're an experienced camper or someone testing the waters before you jump in.
What we tell our campers is that it's very important to find a landmark, because even at some of the parks that were new to me a few years ago, it gets rather confusing when you try and navigate the park. But if you have that one landmark, and when we talk about landmarks, I bring up Karchner Caverns all the time because they have a windmill in the back of their park that's taller than any of the canopy of the trees that are there. And when we hike with our campers, we get about a mile and a half or so away. And what I like to do is ask them, where's camp? And they'll scan the horizon and sometimes look in the total opposite direction that camp is actually in, because the trail wanders, it goes up and down, right and left. So as they scan the horizon, they turn and finally find that windmill and go, there's camp. So it's super important for, you know, if the parents are allowing the kids to wander away from camp a little bit and explore or be along a lake, you know, you look for that tree that really stands out, or a roof of a ramada or a lodge, or, you know, some rock feature that is very unique, and use that as a family, kind of like a fire escape plan at your house, but use that. When you're camping, find that one landmark that everyone will recognize to be able to get you back to camp.
Well, you get to the camp spot and you want to kind of figure out how to set up your tent in the right relation to the sun and, you know, pay attention to safety hazards. Can you kind of walk us through what you would look for when selecting a spot, and then what you pay attention to before setting up a tent?
Even before you venture out and try and set up your tent, you know, always set up your tent at home. That way you're familiar with it. That way when, you know, an extra coffee gets in the way, or lunch or whatever, and you get to camp late and it's almost dark, you're still familiar with how to, you know, mechanically set up your tent. But once you land at your campsite, there's a couple of things you need to survey before you actually bring your tent out and start putting it up. One, again, before you leave home, check your weather. You know, weather is going to drive, you know, the type of gear that you're going to bring with you that you'll need for your setup. So having that handy is really important. And don't let a little rain chase you away, because if you're prepared, you're still going to have a great time. And those are the remember when moments that will always come up. Remember when it rained and we still had a great time? Those are a lot of fun. But find those, you know, look for these things when you actually get to your campsite. One thing I like to tell my campers is to look up and look down. Looking up, and I'll use Dead Horse Ranch as a comparison to be able to look for these things. You want to look for dead branches above you, you know, rock formations that don't look like they're super tight on the side of a cliff. You know, we call the dead branches on big, great big cotton trees or a large tree above your tent widowmakers. And they're named that for a reason. You know, what are the chances of that coming down while you're there? Probably pretty slim, but it's always the butt that gets you. You don't want to take that chance where it does finally let go and drops on your tent. Job one for you when you're camping is keeping your family, friends, whoever you're camping with, safe. So don't even take a chance at, you know, having a widowmaker that's those dead branches or even a rock on a cliff let go simply because it did rain and wash enough sediment out from underneath it for it to tumble down on top of your tent. So watch for those things. Also, before you roll out your tent, make sure you don't set your tent in a bowl type area. And because if you set it there and water accumulates there, if it does rain, you don't want to sleep on a waterbed that doesn't contain the water. That's not a lot of fun. So be very aware of that. Number one, never, never, ever set up your tent in a wash. And to identify those washes, what I like to tell people is pick up some sand in your fingers and blow through the sand as you let it sprinkle out of your fingers. If there's dust beyond blowing out of that sand, it means there hasn't been water that's come through there in a long, long time. But if there's no dust, that means there's water that's pushed through that area. Another thing to look at that sand is what shape the little pebbles are in. If they're round, you know they've rolled down the stream or the dry wash from somewhere else and rolled long enough to bang against other rocks and be roundish in shape to be aware that there has been water in that wash from time to time. Also, an accumulation of grass and trees or sticks and things around the base of trees. That's an identifier that you know water comes through that area as well. So avoid those areas. And if you still would like to camp in that area or wash adjacent, make sure you have at least 10 to 15 vertical feet above that wash. So not just take 10 steps away from the edge of the wash where the grass starts growing and you can identify that end of the wash, 10 to 15 vertical feet. So again, keep your family safe, job one. Also, bring plenty of, at least two tarps, and make those tarps much bigger than the footprint of your tent. The only waterproof thing in your tent is the floor, and you want to protect that floor as much as possible. So the other direction you want to look is down. I mentioned the two directions we look. So clear out those little rocks that may become uncomfortable in the middle of the night. Remove any stickers or twigs or something that may puncture a hole in the bottom of your tent, and then lay your tarp down over the top of that. Once you finish your tent setup, take the excess of the tarp and roll it up and tuck it up underneath the tent. That way you have a berm that the water won't wash up on top of and saturate the bottom of your tent. And even at the door of your tent, you may have extra tarp to be able to take your shoes off. Also, bring your shoes in your tent. That way there's no snakes or scorpions that want to camp out in there. Even if they're stinky, bring them inside your tent or put them in your car. Don't leave them outside overnight. But take that excess tarp if you think there's going to be rain overnight and tuck that underneath your tent as well. That way it doesn't act as a scupper. And then the other tarp, if you do expect rain, put that as a surface tarp over your tent. You'll have a nice big area in front of your tent that's sheltered to be able to play cards with your family, friends, play games, and actually be outside of your tent, stay dry, and watch the weather as it goes by. I love doing that. A good lightning storm, thunder, things like that. But it's always nice to be able to stay dry. And one good hint, if you use trekking poles, is to be able to tip your trekking poles upside down and put the end inside of the grommet. And if you've got some extra paracord, that's one way to support your tarp if you don't have trees in the area. So there's a couple of tips to really get you by in a pinch. Whether it's rain you're fighting or sunshine you're fighting a little bit, those little tips are going to help your weekend become much more enjoyable.
That's great. Really good stuff. I love how you say look up and look down. There, you know, if you can remember those two things, that really takes care of a lot. So that was a really great tip, Louie. Neil, is there anything else?
No, but I loved how he mentioned, going camping when it's raining anyways, because those are the memories that stick with you, and they really are.
Wow, what an information-packed episode. I love talking with Louie anytime I get the chance. He was our last expert to join us on this consortium of camping and outdoor professionals, and I know I'm blown away. I'm sure you are too, Neil. I just think with all of the info that they've shared, we have learned so much today from all of our guests.
I mean, we've learned things like how our mind interacts with nature, all the way to how to cook gourmet meals when we're out there camping and everything in between. And I think that there's so much info in this episode. It doesn't matter if you're new or experienced, there's going to be something in there that you can take away to make your outdoor experiences even better.
Yeah. And honestly, it's about getting out there and practicing, because once you're out there, you're going to recall some of the things that we talked with our guests today about, and you're going to be able to put them into practice. And the more you do things, you're going to pick up your own skills. You're going to have your own values added. And someday maybe you can write into Christine and share one of your recipes with her, or you can write Dr. Bauer a letter and say, you know, you talked all about biophilia and I lived it this weekend with this amazing camping trip.
You're so right, Elizabeth. And I think one of the main, in the vein of that, the main point I want people to know is if you do get frustrated, if you try camping and you get frustrated, it gets easier with time. And sometimes it doesn't seem like that. If it's super cold out there and it's wet and you're not prepared and the fish aren't biting, you know, things like that. If it's not going the way that you had envisioned, you know, look at your planning, go back, go to our website and get some more tips and learn how to overcome what was the obstacle. But just keep at it and eventually you're going to get it and you're going to love it. It's going to be so much better for your life.
Yeah. And, you know, even the most experienced of campers, we still have, you know, our campsite fails now and then. And I will eat a slice of humble pie and be the first to say, I went camping 2 months ago and I've been camping for 12 years consistently. And I messed up dinner big time. And it seriously, I was making mac and cheese and I put in like double the butter. And then my husband unpacked the creamer that I had brought and used it instead of milk. And we couldn't eat it. You know, it's just no matter how good you are, those things will happen. It was bad meal. We had to throw it away.
Oh my God.
It's all about just continuing on. And as you do it more and more, those amazing experiences outweigh any of the learning opportunities. That's what we're going to call our failures, our learning opportunities. So it's really about pushing yourself to try it. And especially if you've not gone camping before, I beg of you, please give it a try. You will make memories that you'll never forget. You're going to have bonding experiences with your friends or your family that just you'd never pay any money to trade in for anything else. You're going to have time of peace and restoration. Going out and camping for a weekend is always restorative to me. It's my like therapy. It's nature therapy.
Yeah, outdoor memories are the best memories. I mean, I'll always remember certain things like trying to catch lizards with my kids when they were like three. You know, we're not catching any, but we're trying because they're, you know, a little slow and I didn't want the lizards to get hurt. But, you know, always remember, you know, chasing after them with little kids out there in the forest. And I wouldn't trade any of my outdoor memories for anything.
No, they're irreplaceable. So please don't rob yourself of that experience, of those memories, of that really special time. There's a learning curve, but take advantage of some of the resources that our panel of experts shared today to help you cut that learning curve down and really just take the opportunity of this beautiful state that we live in. Go explore a state parks. They're a great place to begin your camping adventure. They make it really easy. They have a lot of conveniences. But whatever you do, give it a shot. You won't regret it.